One other announcement that I forgot to tell Brother Hall. If you noticed this morning on your bulletin, I did something a little different in the front. I put Bible questions on the front that I'm going to do for the next few, for this year, and try to expand our Bible knowledge. And the answers to those questions will be on the bulletin board every week until Wednesday, and then I'll take them back and replace them every Sunday morning. I leave them there till Wednesday evening so you can compare your answers to see how you've done. So that's going to be a change, so keep that in mind. Also, as was stated this morning, all the lists for next year are on the board. If you have any questions about any of those things, I've tried to put you where you asked to be and tried to spread it out. If you have any questions about anything, please feel free to let me know, and I hope that all will be satisfactory. This morning, we began a lesson that we want to conclude tonight, discussing the subject of arise and build. And we're talking about, in this time of year, as we mentioned this morning, is a time of reflection and a time of looking forward. And it's a time that we often take inventory at the end of the year, see where we've been, how we got here, and what we've done well and what we could do better. And then we sometimes make plans for the future and things that we hope to accomplish in the upcoming year. I think, as I said this morning, those things are healthy that we do that, that we look and take inventory of our lives and reflect on the past year and the things that we've done and accomplished, or maybe even the things that we did not accomplish. And then to look forward and to make corrections and to make things to be done in a way that will be better and have better results in the coming year. And we used as our text this morning the story of Nehemiah and the rebuilding of Jerusalem. We are looking at the first four chapters of the book of Nehemiah, and we noticed this morning in our lesson that Nehemiah saw a problem. He saw the ruins of Israel, saw that they were in shambles, saw the gates burned with fire, saw that there was no wall, no gates. The temple was in disarray, it was crumbled, it had been burnt by the Babylonians, and it grieved him. And he determined that there was something that he could do about it. And so he prayed to God. And after he prayed to God, he went to the king whom he was serving, Artaxerxes I, and he asked for a leave of absence, that he could go back to Jerusalem and he could rebuild the tombs, as he puts in the text, the tombs of his forefathers. And he asked for the needed information that he would need to have safe passage through the land. And then he asked for letters to be able to purchase timber in order that he could have the material needed in order that he might be able to accomplish the work that he was going to plan to do. But then he went and he surveyed the rubble himself. He had heard about it from others, but then he went at night by himself and he surveyed the situation in Jerusalem. And then he prayed to God. He asked for guidance. He asked for help. He asked for strength and wisdom in how to carry out this great task. But then he knew he couldn't do it alone, and so he needed help. And then he presented his plan to the children of Israel and how it could be carried out, and how they could get it accomplished if they had a desire and a commitment to do the work. This evening, I want to talk about, for just a few moments, Nehemiah as a leader. Nehemiah showed great character and great character traits in being a leader. There's a book that's about Nehemiah, and that's all it's about. It's about leadership, and one of the chapters in the book is about Nehemiah. And there are a lot of good character traits of Nehemiah that would do well for anyone who wants to desire to lead. First of all, he had a sense of a mission and established a reasonable and attainable goal. Sometimes we don't reach our goals because they are too lofty, because they are not unrealistic, because they're not attainable. And then when we don't reach them, when we become discouraged. And so we must, when we set a goal, we must set a realistic goal, one that we have great chance of accomplishing, and not make it too lofty or too unattainable, and to make it reasonable. Nehemiah also was willing to get involved and set his priorities in order to accomplish the goal. He didn't just see what needed to be done and sit back and wait for others to act or guide others to tell them what to do. He personally got involved. One of the character traits of a good leader is he leads by example. He leads by getting involved personally, by doing the things in a way that exhorts and encourages others to get involved. He showed that trait. He patiently waited for God's timing. And when he got discouraged and when he began worried, he prayed at crucial times, when the people were getting restless, when the enemy was trying to discourage him, as we read about this morning, when Sanballat and Gershon tried to dissuade him from stopping the work and tried to set plans in order to disrupt the work and even sent letters with false charges to the king in order to stop the work for a period of time. But in every one of those cases, Nehemiah did not become discouraged. He prayed to God for strength. And he prayed to God for reassurance that this work would be accomplished. And number four, he showed respect to his superiors. He went through the proper channels. He was a cupbearer. He had a very respectable job, but he was in an employment of another man. And yet he understood he was a servant to the king, and yet he did not fear the king, but went to the king and pleaded with him in order to help him that he might accomplish the thing that was on his heart. Next, we see that he made his request with tact and graciousness. He didn't demand, he didn't insist, he asked very graciously for a leave of absence. He was well prepared and thought of his needs in advance. He knew that he would need safe passage as he traveled to Jerusalem. He knew that he would be going through places that people that did not like the Jews, people who were enemies of the Jews, and he knew that he would need safety. And so he asked for letters that would provide him that. Then he also knew that he was going to need material once he got to Jerusalem in order to accomplish the task. And so he got that in advance. As you see, the good sign of a leader is he not only knows what needs to be done, he knows what he's going to need in order to accomplish it, and he goes about getting those things in advance, so when he gets to do the job, he has the needs and the things that he needs in order to get the task done. He took time. He took 3 days to rest, to pray, and to plan, to investigate the situation firsthand, as we just mentioned a few moments ago. He informed others after he knew the size of the problem. He first found out what he was dealing with. He first saw the need. He heard about it. Then he got the materials he needed to do something about it. Then he went and he prayed about it. Then he went firsthand to survey it for himself to know for sure what was going to need to be accomplished. And then he brought the problem to others that could allow him to accomplish the task. Brethren, all of these characteristics are needed in leadership. If you're going to be a good leader, you're going to have these type of character traits. And you're going to have a motivation and a self-discipline that you are motivated from within yourself, not by others, not by being prodded, not by being pushed, but being self-motivated, to be self-disciplined, to act when there's a need and when there's work to be accomplished. That's why Nehemiah was a good leader. He identified himself as one of the people. He was not above them. He was not over them. He was their governor. He was their leader. But he did not press the point, and he did not act as he was better than them. He assured them God was behind the project. He displayed confidence in God, and the obstacles, whatever they would be overcome. He knew there would be obstacles. He told them that ahead of time. And you know, a good leader does that. Everything's not going to go easily. There's going to be bumps in the road. There's going to be ups and downs. There's going to be things you don't expect. It's going to happen. It's inevitable. It's called life. It happens. Prepare for it. Understand that it's part of the process. And when it happens, don't be alarmed. Don't get discouraged and don't throw up your hands and give up. That's what Nehemiah prepared them for. He courageously used his authority of his position. He was in a position that gave him authority. He was in a position that he could do some things that they could not do. And so he used that authority not to lord it over them, not to browbeat them. He used it in a way in order to encourage them, to provoke them, and to lead them to do great things for the Lord and, in essence, for themselves. So you see, Nehemiah was a very good leader. Leadership, personnel, and funding, and a plan of action. All of those things were done by Nehemiah. He had an opportunity, he made an accurate evaluation, and then he made a commitment to do the work. He had a commitment and dedication to the work. He was going to do it, and he wasn't going to let anyone stop him. He didn't let the enemies of God stop him. He didn't let the soldiers stop him. He didn't let the fear of those who were around him threatening to attack him, threatening to stop the project. He didn't let anything deter him from his goal. He was going to keep his mind focused on what he was going to accomplish to do. No enemy. If you forget everything I've said today in this lesson, you remember this one point. No enemy can prevent us from accomplishing God's work except one. Ourselves. The only one that can destroy a work of God is ourselves. No outside enemy, no interference, no discouragement, no obstacle can deter the work of God if men and women have a focus and a mind and a commitment to accomplish that work. I want you to take your Bible and turn to Nehemiah chapter 4 for a moment. In Nehemiah chapter 4, the enemies of God were trying to stop this work before it ever really got started. And Tobiah, the Ammonite, in verse number 3, is trying to discourage the Israelites. And it says, "Now Tobiah the Ammonite was beside him and said, whatsoever they build, even if a fox goes up against it, it will break down their stone wall. Hear, O God, for we are despised. Turn their reproach on their own heads, and give them their plunder as a land of captivity. Do not cover their iniquity, and do not let their sin be blotted out from before you. For they have provoked you to anger before the builders." Now he's asking God to bring their discouragement upon their own heads, to turn it around on them. But then look at verse number 6. The key verse in the book of Nehemiah is in chapter 4 and verse number 6. "So we built the wall, the entire wall, and the wall was joined together up to half its height, for the people had a mind to work." Why did they accomplish this work? Because they set their mind to do it, and they didn't let anything stop them from accomplishing their goal. People had a mind to work. Ladies and gentlemen, spiritual work is tedious, and it's painstaking, and it's time consuming, and it's not always easy, and it doesn't always bear quick results. Oh, it'd be nice if we could preach one sermon like Philip did to the eunuch in Acts chapter 8 and have a conversion. But that doesn't happen all the time. That's a rarity. But that doesn't mean that the Word of God still doesn't have power. It doesn't mean there are not people still out there looking for the truth. I want you to take a good hard look at the religious landscape today. It's in shackles. It's about entertainment. It's about making people feel good about themselves. It's about keeping the people in the pew happy. It's about the social aspect of it. It's about the physical aspect about it. The thing that's been diminished is the spirituality. And people are beginning to figure it out. They're beginning to tire of all these distractions. You know, I saw a very good thing. I don't see very many good things on the internet by celebrities, but I saw a quote from Jeff Foxworthy that I thought was very interesting. He was talking about preachers. He said, if your preacher needs puppet shows, drama skits, smoke shows, lights, choreography, if he needs to have puppet shows, if he needs entertainment in order to keep his people intact and to make the church grow, you need a new preacher. You know what? I agree with him. You know what? All those things will build numbers. All those things will make people come in and be happy and be content, and it will grow a church numerically. But it will not bring them one inch closer to a relationship with Jesus Christ and to bring them one whit closer to salvation of their sinful soul. It cannot accomplish that. But the sadness is, too many times, people in the Lord's church look over the proverbial fence at the greener pastures and think that that would be so nice, and that they're seeming to have success, and they're growing, and they're building, and they're building on some more. And we look, why are they doing it, and why are we not? Ask yourself the question, why? You know, I've learned a long time ago that whatever you use to draw a person to Christ, you're going to have to keep up in the ante in order to keep them. But you see, if I draw them by the Word of God, I don't have to up the ante, because that's the only thing I'll ever use. That's the only thing that can truly draw men to God, is His Word. If they can't be drawn by the Word of God, they can't be drawn. If they can't be led to Christ through His Word, they can't be led. And all the other gimmicks that men can think up, and all the little things that they do in order to pack the pews and to keep the people happy and to grow numerically and to have large Ephesus and to do all these social things that they do in order to make society a better place. Let me ask you something. If you gave a home to every homeless person, if you fed every hungry person, if you stopped the social needs of society like drug abuse, alcohol abuse, pornography. Yeah. If you stopped all these social ills and you were able to get all of those things under control, have you brought them one inch closer to Christ? Have you taken care of their greatest problem? What is man's greatest problem? That's an easy question. Man's greatest problem is his sin. And there's only one solution to that problem: Jesus Christ and His sacrifice. There is no other solution that will work. And that is a solution that men need, even if they don't understand that they need it. That's the only thing that can help them spiritually. And brethren, we better never, ever forget that. It is the gospel that saves men. Not gimmicks. Not food and frolic, not games, not social agenda, not social gospel. That doesn't save people. That makes them feel good, that makes them feel comfortable, that builds buildings numerically, but it doesn't save the soul. And so again, I ask, how have we really helped the human race? How has that really helped the human race? It hasn't brought them any closer to knowledge of God. It hasn't brought, you know, you do well. I wouldn't suggest you do it on a Sunday, but you have an opportunity to go to a meeting in a denomination. Go. Listen to what they're taught. Listen to what's preached. It's not the Bible. It's not full of the Bible. Because that's not what men want. Men want things that make them feel good. They want things that will make them feel good about themselves. And don't give them any accountability. Don't put any responsibility on them. Don't put any commitment on them. Just let them come and go as they please. And then they're happy and they'll keep coming. So what you have to do is you have to decide what you want. You want a big building? You want it filled? You want people to be happy? You want people to not be unhappy and not have any commitment, not have any personal responsibilities? Then go up the hill across the street. because you can have it all. But that won't bring you one inch closer to salvation. And I thought that's what we're supposed to be most concerned about, is the salvation of the lost. Brethren, we need to remember how terrible hell is and how long eternity is. And we should do everything in our power to try to help men to avoid that. And the only thing that can help them avoid it is the gospel of Jesus Christ. And God put us here in order to do that very thing in this community. That's our job. That's our responsibility. That's our duty. That's why we're here. And that job is each and every one of ours' responsibility to see that we do it to the best of our ability. Cooperation, working together, brings unity. The coordination of the work stands out in the phrases next to. If you studied the book of Nehemiah, you will see this phrase next to 28 times in chapter number 3. In chapter number 3 alone, you will see the phrase next to this person, next to that person. You know how they built the wall? The assignments were made near people's homes. The people that live closest to one section of the wall, that's the part of the wall that they were required to build. Those, they worked in shifts. They also worked with a sword in one hand and a tool in the other. And they had shifts where some people would be covering and protecting them while other people would be doing the work. But they used everyone, and everyone was used according to their ability, and all the people worked together in order to get the work accomplished, because they had a commitment to the work. Commuters assigned to more remote areas. From Jericho they brought people, from Tekoa, from Gibeon, from Mizpah. They brought these people together in different places wherever they resided in order to make it most convenient for them to do the work that needed to be done. They assigned by vocation. They had priests who took care of the spiritual aspect. They had goldsmiths that took care of the work they had to do with the mending of gold. They had perfume makers. They had rulers. They had merchants. They had people that were doing different things. But everybody was doing something. And everybody was working together in unity, in harmony, and in peace. And the work moved forward. Read the book. They were able to get this work accomplished. Isn't that what Jesus wanted? When he was facing the cross, and he was having his last conversation with his disciple before his death, what was on his mind? You know, you learn a lot about somebody in what was on their mind before they die. The last words of people are very precious to people because they really tell you what was important to a person. What did Jesus pray for in the final prayer that he uttered before he was arrested? In John 17, we don't have to wonder. We have the part of that prayer recorded. And in John 17, in verse number 20, here's what Jesus was praying for. He says, I do not pray for these alone, but for those who will believe in me through their word, that they all may be one, as you, Father, are in me, and I in you, that they all may be one in us, that the world may believe that you have sent me. What was Jesus wanting? What was he hoping would happen after his death? That his people would remain one. Unity. We're not talking about being under the same roof. We're not talking about everybody who loves God and everybody who calls themselves a Christian. We're talking about true unity. True biblical unity that's based upon truth. That was the basis and that was the example and that was the purpose of his prayer. The plea of Paul. What did Paul pray for the Corinthians? That there be no division among you. That you be of the same mind and of the same spirit. In 1 Corinthians 1 verse 10. In Ephesians chapter 4, he gave the four platforms of graces. One faith, one Lord, one baptism, one God, one body, and one spirit, and one Lord, and one God, and Father of all. Those are the basis of unity. And without those seven ones, there can never be true biblical unity. Those ones are absolutely essential. You know, those ones are like pillars. And if you want to build the foundation of faith, you got to build it on those pillars. And if you don't have those pillars, then your foundation is going to be weak and it is going to fall. In Philippians chapter 2, he told them to have the mind of Christ, to let each one esteem others better than themselves, to look to others' interests more than your own. Why? Because this mind was also in Christ Jesus. What was the greatest lesson that Jesus tried to teach his disciples prior to his arrest? Remember the last thing he taught them? He washed their feet. In John chapter 13, why did he do that? He did that as an example of something. He told them that unless they have a servant's heart, they can never be effective and never be successful in being his disciples. And you know what? That's still true. What illustration did the Apostle Paul use in 1 Corinthians 12 when he was talking about, even though we are one body, we are many members? What illustration did he use in how the body is strengthened both physically and spiritually? He used a physical body. You know, what happens when part of your body gets sick? In time, what happens if it doesn't get better? It goes through your whole body. It weakens your whole body. It might start in your head. It might start with a sinus. It might start with a headache. It might start in any way, but if it continues and goes on, it weakens your whole body. And you know what? He used that illustration to illustrate the spiritual body. Yes, we're many members, but we're one body. And every member has a part to play in that body. And when any one member and when any one part is not doing their part, that weakens the body. And you know what it causes to happen? Overload. What did I mean? You know, if you have a part of your body that begins to not be able to function, another part of the body will try to cover for it. And if you have too much for it to cover, it can't do it because it's beyond its capacity. When one part of the body doesn't do its job, then that means someone else has to take up the slack. What happens? People get tired. People become discouraged. They get overloaded. And then it weakens the body. Let me ask you a question. How do you think the things that we do on a regular basis here get done? They just get done? It just happens that they always get done? You know, there are physical things that have to be done, and there are spiritual things that have to be done. Do you ever wonder who does them? Do you ever wonder who accomplishes them? Think about it for a minute. If somebody is sick, who checks on them? Somebody's missing and hasn't been attending like they should and missed a few services. Who checks on them? If somebody is struggling in their faith, who checks on them? If someone is having a difficult time and going through some traumatic things in their life, who encourages them? Who calls them up? Who goes over and prays with them? Who goes over and tries to encourage them and tries to help ease their burden? Who does that? How does that get accomplished? Well, it just gets done. Now, am I saying that you need to tell everybody what you're doing? No, I'm not saying that, because the Bible talks about that too. But those things that need to be done, somebody has to do them. Who is that somebody? Do I have to be assigned to do it? Somebody have to tell me to do it? Or do I just take it upon myself to know that it needs to be done and do it? You see, this is God's hope, that God's people would work together, not for the good of one, but for the good of all. Because that's how growth is produced. It's produced when all the body is doing its part. You remember we read this morning, Ephesians chapter 4, verse 11 through 16, when each part is working effectively and doing its share. That's how you produce unity. That's how you produce cooperation. That's how you produce harmony and peace, is by working together. And that should always be our goal, because that's what is effective. That's what works. Submitting to the same head. You know something? We all have the same boss. God is our head. He is the head of this spiritual body. He directs it. He tells us how it's to function. He tells us what to do. He tells us how to do it. And he tells us why we should do it. And he tells each of us. And then he leaves it up to us to accomplish that work by submitting to his authority and his leadership. That's what Ephesians 4, verse 15 says. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 15, we are to submit to him in love, intertwining our abilities and doing our part. Brother, there's things you can do that I cannot do. There's things I can do that you cannot do. We're just not a competition. We're not in competition with one another. We're working together. What you can do that I can't do, I'm grateful. Let me give you an example. I couldn't carry a tune in a bucket. I'm deaf in my left ear. I have no pitch. I don't know about tone. I don't know about setting pitch. And so that's something I cannot do. So am I envious of people like Mel or Bill or Bruce or Tim that can lead singing? No, I'm not envious. I'm glad there's people like that. I'm glad there's people that can do that, because that's just as important as what I do. What I do is not any more important than what you do. My part is just a different part, that's all. Just because I'm up here all the time, and because I'm teaching or I'm preaching, that doesn't mean I'm the most important thing. I'm not. I'm just part of it. I'm not all of it, I'm just part of it. And what you do is as important as what I do. I understand that, and God understands that. But brethren, it gets a little weary when some people are doing more than they should be doing, because other people are not doing what they ought to be doing. That gets tiring, and that weighs down the body. And what it does is it causes discouragement. And that causes stagnation. That's how it works. The result, if we work together, if we cooperate together, if we're all on the same page, if we're trying to get to the same goal, then what will happen is that we'll grow. We'll grow inwardly, and in time, God will give the increase and we'll grow outwardly. Ladies and gentlemen, it is not an accident. You will never grow outwardly if you are not growing inwardly. It cannot be accomplished. There has to be an inward growth before there can be an outward growth. These people were focused, they were diligent, they were ready, and they were persistent. They did not give up. They did not get tired. They did not look for an excuse. They looked for ways to copy what was needed to be done. We just read, they had a mind to work. You know, it's easy to make excuses. It's easy to try to find blame. It's easy to try to do everything to destroy instead of to build up. That's easy. Anybody can do it. But you have to be focused and persistent and diligent in doing the Lord's work. Diligent in prayer. We need to continually pray for the work here. We need to pray that we do what God would have us to do, that we would pray for his help, that we would pray for his wisdom and his guidance. We need to pray for that regularly. And we don't need to just do it when we are here. We need to do that every day as an individual, to pray for the... Let me ask you, son, do you pray for the church here? Do you pray for its growth? Do you pray for its strength? Do you pray for the light that shines in this community? You know that sign we have up on the hill over here says, ye are the light of the world. Who's ye? Who is that? That's us. God put us here to be a beacon in a dark world. And it's up to us to let our light shine, that men might see our good work and glorify our Father in heaven. I think Jesus said that in Matthew 5, verse 16. We set watch day and night. They cleared out the distractions. They were ready to defend and protect. They worked from daybreak until the stars appeared. These people were focused. They were diligent. They were persistent. They were going to get this done no matter what it cost them personally. And you know what? They got it done. They got it done in 52 days. They built the walls of the city and the gates of the city. And in 52 days, those walls and those gates went up. How did they accomplish that great work? They didn't accomplish it by Nehemiah by himself. And they didn't accomplish it by one man. They accomplished it because they worked together. They were diligent. They were focused. They were persistent. And they were ready to put their mind to get the job done. That's what it takes. That's what it takes. Now, let's make some application. Because really, this is what this lesson is about. What about accomplishing success in building the work here? Do we have a diligence to want to see the work grow, to be strong? Where is our focus? Are we ready to do the work, or are we ready to let someone else do it? And are we persistent? Do you have a mind to work? I can't answer that for you. You have to answer that for yourself. Are we diligent in prayer? I don't know what you pray about. That's between you and God. But one of the things you ought to be praying about is this work. Are we watchful day and night? Do we have a constant concern for each other? For the growth, the church here, for the people that are in it? For the things that people are going through? Are there distractions? Yes, there's distractions. There's distractions all the time. You know, I tell people all the time, I'm afraid to leave. Because every time I leave, something happens. You know what? That can be discouraging if you let it. If you let it be discouraging. But you know, all these things that we've had happen in the last few months, they're an opportunity to serve. That's what they are. They're an opportunity to help and reach out to other people. Have you availed yourself to all those opportunities? Elizabeth Ellis, Mike Toomey, now Bruce, Judy Derringer, Harold Sutherland, Frank Perkins. These people are struggling. They're having difficulty. But you know what can happen? We can be so wrapped up in our own world that we forget about all that. But let me ask you a question. What if it was you going through chemo treatments? What if it was you that just had your colon removed? What if it's you going through the test and the things that Bruce Parrott's going through? Or Frank Perkins, who struggles to get a breath from going from one chair to another. Or Harold Sutherland looking at four walls all the time. Or Betty Goodlett, who really sometimes doesn't even know who you are. Does it matter? Would it matter if it was you? Would it matter if it was me? Would it matter? Are we ready to defend and protect? Are you ready and willing to work hard for the Lord? You know, I ask you this morning to take a good look at yourself. I'm not asking you to look at other people. That's easy to do that. I want you to look within yourself. Within yourself and ask yourself these questions. And see what kind of answers. Be honest with yourself. And whether you're diligent, whether you're focused, whether you're ready, and whether you're persistent in doing the Lord's work at Harrodsburg. But you know their greatest strength was? They didn't depend upon themselves. They depended upon God. And that's where our greatest strength lies. It doesn't lie within us. It lies in our Creator. And when we learn to lean upon God, to trust God, to do it God's way, to focus our needs on what God would have us to do, and put the things that we want and the things that we desire second, great things can be accomplished. Because they trusted God. Why? Because they knew that God would support the work. They were delivered from their enemies. The enemies didn't defeat them. They were delivered from their enemies. Read chapter 4 through chapter 6. Their enemies were defeated. They were supported in battle. And he remembered their work, and their work prospered. Why? Because they trusted in God. Again, are you depending on God? Or do you depend on yourself too much? Who do you lean on? Who is your strength? Who do you turn to when life gets tough? When you get discouraged? When you get troubled? Who do you turn to first? God's way works, folks. I don't care what we're talking about. Whether we're talking about the work of the church, whether we're talking about the worship of the church, whether we're talking the organization of the church, whether we're talking about things that we have to do as far in the church as discipline, as correction, whatever it is, whatever God's way is, it works. It always will work. The reason that it doesn't work is because it's not implemented and because it's not followed through. It's not because the plan's bad. It's because the implementing of the plan's bad. The plan's not bad. That's like marriage. People say, well, marriage, it just doesn't work today. No, there's nothing wrong with marriage. There's nothing wrong with that institution. What's wrong with it are the people that are in it, because they don't have the commitment. They don't have the dedication. They don't understand that they have to be willing to give themselves to others, and they must put themselves below, and they must try to help the other person. That's why it doesn't work. It's not because the institution's bad, it's because of how it's implemented. Never compromise with God's enemies, because it will consume us. We can't compromise the truth. We can't change the direction and focus of the spiritual world. We can't do that. All we can do is keep God's plan and do it His way, because that's the only formula that's going to produce success. It cannot be produced in any other way. Finally, we have the truth on our side. In this spiritual war that we're in, and we're in a war, God's people will always win because God's people have the truth. And the truth cannot be defeated. And that's what makes it different. That's our trump card. The trump card that makes us know that we're doing the right thing and that we're going in the right direction and we're on the right course is because we have the truth. And we have to have the character that goes along with the truth. God will remember our labor. But I want you to remember one other thing. God will also remember our failures. He's a just God. One day, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to stand before God and we're going to give an account. And one of the things that you're going to give an account for, and one of the things that I'm going to give an account for, is the work and the labor that I did as long as I lived here and as long as I preached here. I'm going to give an account for all the work that I did as a gospel preacher at Harrodsburg, Kentucky. And I understand that. And I accept that. And I'm doing my dead level best to do the job that I believe God wants me to do. And I'm doing the best that I can. Do I make mistakes? Yes. Do I always use good judgment? No. Can I do better? I always strive to do better. But brethren, what about us? What about you? One day, you're going to stand before God. And one of the things that you're going to give an account of is how you carried out His work as a member of this congregation. I'm not going to be there. Your family's not going to be there. It's going to be you. It's going to be God's word. And it's going to be your record. And you're going to give an account. And depending on how that comes out is whether you're going to be lost or whether you're going to be saved. Now, brethren, that's just the way that it is. And God, you know what He did to help us? He told us what the standard is. He told us what to expect. And He told us how we can make sure that we're on the right side of this when we stand before Him in judgment. You know, I told you before that when I was in school, if I got an open book test, I could have went to Harvard. If I could have had an open book test where I knew every question and I knew every answer, I'd have been a 4.0 student and I would have been able to have my college education paid for. But it didn't work that way in college. But you know what? It works that way with God. God gives us an open book test. Here's all the questions. Here's all the answers. And when we stand before Him, we take the final exam. How should anybody fail this exam? You can't. Unless you don't prepare for the test. I can prepare for me. I can try to encourage you. I can try to provoke you. I can try to plead with you. I can try to reason with you. And I've tried to do that. And prayed about it. And cried about it. And labored about it. But that's all I can do. The rest is up to you. So tonight, we begin a new year. We begin a new year here at Harrodsburg. And how and what we accomplish is dependent on each and every one of us that are a member of this congregation. I commit myself to do the best I can, to do everything I can, to make 2016 a good year. I'm asking you, for God's sake and for your own sake, to join me with your commitment to His work and to His church, that we could do better in 2016 than we did in 2015. I'm ready to put my shoulder to the task. I hope you're willing to join me. Please take your song books on and turn to the song that Brother Mel has selected. If you're here and you're not a Christian, or if you are and you need to make some correction in your life, we don't want to end this service without giving you an opportunity to render obedience to the gospel and correct your life. Just one more thing before I end this lesson. I want you to know from the bottom of my heart that I appreciate the many men who stand up here behind this table or this microphone and they pray for me and they pray for my work. I want you to know that I appreciate that and I want you to know I need it. I need you to do that. But I need you to have that same commitment and love for each other and to pray for one another, help one another, encourage one another. We are in this together. And we either lose together or we'll do great things together. It depends on each and every one of us to join together to get it accomplished. And with God's help, we'll do great things. Think about that as together we stand and sing.